Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another reality show hosted by Golden Hawk. Join Golden Hawk as she travels down the rabbit hole exploring many of life's mysteries and adventures. Because here at another reality show, we're not afraid to let our imagination soar and our intuition run wild. So relax, get comfortable, because for the next 2 hours, we're inviting you to open your heart, spread your wings, and fly. And now, here's Golden Hawk.
Hello! Hello, everybody! Thank you so much for being here today. Yes, indeed, I am Golden Hawk, host of another reality show, and I am super, super excited because today is the first of many shows that where Goldie is off the grid. I have left my Thursday night 8 to 10 time slot frigidity space, and I am now floating through the ethers, attracting and playing with wonderful, fabulous people and wonderful, fabulous information. And today, clearly, no one will be disappointed. My guest is so in tune with the same frequencies I am in tune with. And in fact, she even wrote a book called Frequencies. But I'll introduce her, and you'll pick up right away that she speaks our language. So let me introduce Penny Pierce. Wrote this on her website, and I got to read it because it's so brilliant. "We're leaving the information age," says Penny Pierce, one of the world's leading experts on intuition and sensitivity development, "and entering the intuition age. That means our perception is shifting and the rules of the way life functions are changing. It is only by becoming skillful with intuition and mastering the art of working with frequency principles that govern energy and awareness that you'll be truly successful in our lighting fast new world." And that caught me immediately. Welcome to the show, Penny. I'm so glad you're here today.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah. Your information is just right on. And, you know, everybody from Facebook knows, okay, Goldie has a cold today, but you know what? There was no way I was canceling the show. Penny can talk. She shares eloquently. And what I was thinking we could do very loosely, I was thinking maybe the first hour we talk about frequencies, the second hour we talk about intuition, and if they blend together, of course, or if we switch over at any one point, that's not a big deal. There's a lot to share, and I'll jump in every now and then, but I mean, clearly the wisdom that you have to share about, like, because one of the bases of my radio show that I'm very kind of I'm steadfast about is about being present. This is about information that is applicable right now. You know, this isn't about reading the Dead Sea Scrolls, you know, or the Bible 2,000 years ago. This is about, you know, right now there is tremendous intensity going on. There is tremendous changes going on. And in my humble opinion, reality itself is changing, and therefore the rules to engage in reality are changing, you know, if already changed. So I would, you know, not quite sure where you want to start, but sorry. I've had NyQuil moments today. I apologize. My frequency has been invaded by NyQuil. Energy, the unified field. I mean, there's so much we can talk about. I'm not quite sure how you want to start. So however you feel comfortable would be great.
Well, usually somebody asks me a question first.
Okay.
Do you have a place to start?
Yeah, maybe. Okay, that makes total sense. Okay, how about one of the things that you talked about in one of your shows recently about being transparent. Let's start there, because I'm very interested in that. So,
and the importance
of being transparent.
Well, I mean, you have to understand kind of what that means, is I think that as everything is speeding up today, we're going through a process, really, where all the so-called solid or opaque parts of ourselves, which would be fear, it would be subconscious blocks, it would be things that make us go into contraction and resistance, and when we feel solid and heavy and dark, those kinds of things are actually being shaken loose these days by the higher energy that's happening on the planet. And that higher energy, that acceleration of the frequency of things, affects our bodies, you know, and that affects our emotions and it affects our minds also. But I think that all that kind of slow frequency, low frequency kind of material that's based on fear, and that has basically stopped the flow of energy and made everything slow down, that can't stay suppressed anymore. And it's now kind of popping up to the surface. It's being jostled loose and comes up to the surface and comes back into the conscious mind, and we have to process it. You know, we have to, you know, basically see through it. We have to get clear of it. And every time you clear fear, then basically you become transparent in that area. There's nothing in the way. And then that transparency has to do with becoming actually more loving, or allowing the soul to flow through where it couldn't get through before because of, you know, clenching onto these old ideas. So it's a gradual process, and you could call it psychological growth if you want it, or spiritual growth. But basically it is the idea of clearing fear and allowing the soul to be fully present, you know, in the physical plane, you know, in the body. And so that basically what's happening today, I think, is that, you know, we're merging the world of form and the world of no form. We're realizing that that inner reality of energy and consciousness is merging with the world of matter, and that they are together at the same time. It's not either or. And when that happens, that's when we get transformation. That's when we get a real shift in consciousness, and everything starts to look different.
Yeah.
It starts to function differently. Because if you identify yourself only as a body and form, and things are separate from each other, that's a very slow, gradual, cause and effect kind of perception. And as you start to go into the inner world and realize that everything's vibrating, that we're actually made of energy and consciousness, then things speed up phenomenally. And, of course, then we come into the present moment where everything's instantaneous.
Yeah, exactly.
And life is becoming instantaneous. You know, so it's transparency is kind of the end goal, I think, of getting rid of fear.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've always looked at it for myself as a space to become... it, where I'm becoming the space itself. In other words, when I'm afraid, something must be above me that can scare me. And as I become transparent, it eliminates that space above me by becoming me itself. I become the space, you know, where I was giving my power away to something that supposedly has more power over me than me. That seems to be disappearing through my transparency. And for me, the transparency is about simply showing myself, you know, as a human being going through this transformational period, you know, with all my flaws and blunders and blisters and, you know, I'm a nanny, so I often use biological things, you know, like, you know, if there's a piece of snot on my nose, okay, I'm human, let me know, I'm happy to wipe it off, but, you know, I'm not going to crawl under, you know, the covers and never come out again because you saw that. You know, it's like, we're human. Things are happening, and we shouldn't be so afraid to show the trueness of what's happening to us, because I think there's camaraderie in us, you know, supporting each other during these frequency times where, you know, that which we suppressed is no longer able to be suppressed.
Yeah, and of course it's a very confusing process and a confusing time, because not only yes. all of your stuff's coming up and all of my stuff's coming up, but everybody's stuff is coming up, and it's
yeah.
floating around in the field of current events, and you know, it's hard to tell. You know, we're all more telepathic, so we're picking up on all kinds of stuff just kind of floating in the environment. And
yeah.
whose is it anyway? You know, it's like it belongs to everyone.
Yeah.
And it's seen
yeah.
often quite overwhelming. You know, it's almost hard to watch the news anymore, or to, you know, to really listen to politics, the amount of hatred and the undercurrents that never used to be talked about are now really surfacing and being, you know, volatile and loud.
Yeah.
You know, and so
yeah.
it's chaotic. So it's even more important then, of course, that we learn to focus ourselves in what I call the home frequency, which is
you
really
read
a vibe.
My mind. Yes, sorry. Yes.
What?
You just read my mind. I was going, the home frequency, that's what we all want to go to, and then you just said it.
Well, that's what I use it in my book. Frequency is to distinguish between the external vibrations that we tend to match unconsciously in other people, which could go up and down and in and out, and you know, depending on who you're near, you could match them and feel good or bad, depending on if they're lower or higher than you or what, you know, and we do that all the time unconsciously. But
right.
we tend to get tossed around by, you know, the winds when we do that. So instead of looking outside for, you know, a sense of self and identifying with something externally, I think it's important to focus inside and find that home frequency, which is really the vibration of your soul when it's in the body. And it's not that hard to recognize it. It's, you know, you feel good, you enjoy yourself, you're having fun, you are enthusiastic. You know, there are many ways to tune into or have triggers where you can tune back into the way you want to feel and the way you like to feel. So that there is a kind of preferred state that we all have where we're enjoying being ourselves and being
yeah.
in the world. And
yeah,
you
nice.
Have a choice to be that way or not. You know, most people don't even realize they have a choice. But that's kind of what's up these days. It's like, you know, get it under control here, you people, you know, and make your choice. Nobody
yeah.
can make you feel bad if you don't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not somebody else is supposed to make you happy. You are able to do it yourself every minute. And it doesn't mean we don't encounter things that are upsetting or shocking. And, you know, of course we recoil. We're animals. We're, you know, we have that fight or flight response
right.
to things. But
yeah.
you don't have to stay in it, right? You can shift
right.
yourself out of it as quickly as possible.
Yes. Yes, and I believe it's a practice. It feels to me, you know, it's not like you cross a line, you know, where your soul's in your body and, you know, that's it, the work is over. You know, it seems to me that because the soul works from such a different perception than the ego, that, you know, there's a practice in constantly, you know, like you were saying, you know, like for me it's always, well, what can I garnish from this? Where's the value in, if I'm feeling bad, because there's something in me that, you know, in my humble opinion, something I've suppressed, you know, from whenever. And if I'm feeling bad, it's ready to now come back home. Not, because like I have a new thing where I invite my dark aspects to my table. This is like my meditation. I invite them to my table, but I'm not saying that you can't come back home until you become light, until you get better. Then you can come home. For me, and I'm very curious what your feelings and thoughts are on this, for me, I'm finding that when I allow my dark aspects or my shadow side or just the things that are painful to me, when I let them come back in, back home, exactly as they are, there seems to be an alchemy that happens that literally, it's really beyond words, but there's something in the transformational process that it, when it's allowed to be exactly as it is, to come back home, both it is changed and I am changed in the moment that it's allowed to come back inside me.
Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with, you know, when you resist something and don't allow it, that's a part of the totality of self. It's kind of an energy that's been contracted, that's all. It's not flowing. It's stuck energy. It doesn't have flow in it. And if you resist it, you can't have access to it or the energy that's in it. So as soon as you allow something to be, it pretty much uncurls and the energy comes back to you and you get more of yourself back. But I think that, you know, becoming transparent or growing spiritually is not a matter of totally, you know, having the soul in yourself and ta-da, it's done. It's more like it's happening every other millisecond. Like we rock in and rock out and rock in and rock out, just like particles and waves. We're part of physics, you know. Our consciousness comes in and becomes physical. Then we space out and we are back in the, you know, higher dimensions, and we're back here, and then we're back there. And so the soul is always present. It's the mind, and I think the left brain especially, which I do equate a lot with the ego, because it's very compartmentalized and fairly isolated and analytical. It works with the parts rather than the whole. Mm. And that kind of perception, there's nothing wrong with it. It has its uses, but it shouldn't be the boss. You know, it shouldn't be running the show.
Yes.
And so when you get identified with the left brain too much and think that you are your thoughts or that things, reality is about proof, you know, and analytical stuff, you get stuck. Consciousness gets stuck in that, and it can't move at that point. It gets defined and locked down, and you have beliefs, and nothing moves anymore. There's no flow. And that is kind of the problem right now, I think, is that a lot of us are stuck in fixed beliefs and resistances, which simply doesn't allow energy to flow, which means it doesn't let it oscillate, and that means you can't get back in touch with the soul very easily. Mm. Normal consciousness rocks. It comes in, it goes out. Your left brain, your right brain. Your left brain, your right brain. You know, you're in your body, you're in your mind, you're in your emotions, you're in your soul. You know, it moves. And it's not about just being one way. It's about having flow. You know, and I think that resistance and contraction that it gets stuck is maybe one of the worst things. And yet focus is a kind of contraction. But focus is temporary. It moves in and you focus on something and concentrate, pay attention, and then you move into lack of focus, maybe boredom. You know, you let go, you open up again, you access bigger ideas, then you focus again. And again, here's the rocking and the flow.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, the left brain would like enlightenment to just all be one thing, you know, have it all be locked down. Okay, now total light, that's it. You know, no, it's not that way. As long as you're in a body, it's not going to be just one way, you know. And so the dark parts, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that they've been held too long, you know.
Okay, yeah,
Fear is simply a partially perceived experience where you didn't see the whole picture. You didn't get the whole thing. You got stuck or went into resistance before you let the real outcome happen.
Yes. Yes,
and so part
that's exactly
of it is
right.
allowing yourself to go back and have a revisioning or seeing it with the God's eye view and saying, oh, it was just that. Oh, that's nothing. That was silly. You know, you know, I'm fine. And then it kind of just dissolves.
Yeah.
You forget that you were afraid. You forget that anything bad ever happened to you. And you think eventually, wait a minute, was that my problem or was that just somebody else's problem? Or, you know, you forget that you owned it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Because it is a remembering.
You know, you return to the memory of what you actually are, which has always been there. It's just been covered up like, you know, dust over a light bulb. You can't, you know... So part of this process is just removing the clutter. because the soul is always there. It's who you are.
Right on, right on.
You know? So it's actually
yeah.
very easy. It's not such a big, you know, to do.
Okay, well, why does it feel so big to so many? You know, how many people do you hear say change is so difficult? It's like, you know, like these beliefs are like these boulders that stand in front of people. And, like, I mean, for me, I say if you believe change is difficult, the first belief you want to flip is that change is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, because I tend to find, for me, the processing of my experiences is exactly like you said. I'm getting less from the detail work of it initially because I got to get to the bigger parts of the picture. In other words, how do I keep it in flow? What beliefs keep me in flow? Because if I'm in flow from a belief system, if I'm in aligned with that flow, well, then the flow is then experienced, you know, effortlessly, as opposed to if I'm not in alignment, you know, it's like, you know, my boat is getting smashed up against the dock and it's killing me. And, you know, I might not be as willing to go through these changes, you know, if everything seems so painful. I don't know
well,
if that makes sense.
Well, I think
sense,
pain
but.
Comes from resistance and contraction. And, you know, part of it is, again, the left brain where it locks down a meaning and then has to stay attached to that meaning and not allow anything else to happen. So it has to be on guard against anything that might threaten those meanings. And so change is experienced as painful, whereas, you know, a creative person, variety and surprise are the best things in the world because it
right
brings
on.
The new stuff. It brings all the good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
And so it's a lot of it, too, I find, is about inner speech and outer speech, that you get an idea, you get a meaning, and then you say it to yourself. This is such and such, and you make a declarative statement.
Okay.
And that's really what beliefs are. They're locked down thoughts that don't
yeah.
move. And often then the left brain will continue to make these declarative statements, and often they're negative declarative statements. Well, I can't do that, and I don't do this, and I'm not good at that, and you know, whatever. And you'll limit yourself by kind of parroting these negative declarative statements, which don't allow any movement. They don't allow any change or anything
new. Right. Right.
So I really advocate people noticing what those statements are and then turning them around. So, for instance, like I heard a woman say, I'm afraid of public speaking. I never
okay.
do public speaking. I'm afraid of it. And I said, well, what if you said, if I did public speaking, I actually might learn some really interesting things, or I might discover some things about energy or the audience or what might come out of my mouth. It could be interesting.
Right on, right on.
And as soon as you open it like that, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't have to be good at it. You can just say it's a discovery process, or it could be interesting to me.
Yeah.
I don't really know, but maybe it could be good, you know, and then
yeah.
the energy can flow.
Yeah. Right.
And so there are a lot of ways you could turn around those negative statements, and as soon as you do, you'll feel the difference in the reality. If you make the opposite kind of statement about the ones you usually make, you'll suddenly open
yes.
a new world to yourself.
Yeah, literally. Literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because it definitely seems, for me, the process that it's about what I call turning the upside-down world back right side up. Like, from my awareness, it just appears that the conditioning of you know, at least America, that's where I know it best, that's where I'm from, we've been so conditioned, you know, to exactly like you said, to be compartmentalized, to be alone, you know, all the technology didn't necessarily bring the world closer. It kept us in our rooms talking to people through technology instead of being outside having
mm-hmm.
barbecues, talking to people, you know,
mm-hmm.
and on some, you know, and I get it. It has the potential to serve, but the culture itself, you know, just along with certain evolutionary ties that, you know, we've followed, we have isolated ourselves, and of course, this is speaking truly from my own experiences. Like, I'm just coming now into the space where, for the like the last 12 to 15 years, I've been seriously working on the inside of me, you know, getting to genuinely know who I am. And now I'm wanting, you know, I feel confident enough that I'm comfortable with knowing who I am, but I would like to, I'd like to be more social. And I now understand that, you know, if I go into, you know, my own little head case situation, I can either bring myself out of it quickly, or I'm no longer responding, you know, like initially I when I would go inside, I'd go, listen, I'm puking right now. You don't want to be by me. You know, this is, I look terrible. I smell terrible. I feel terrible. Because it seemed like it was such a, going inside, all I saw was my darkness at first. I didn't really know myself as a loving being, but it would appear that the more I stayed inside with myself, the way you stay inside is, I was loving myself by staying in there. And when you come out, you're like, you really understand everybody's darkness isn't so dark anymore. And there just seems to be this compassion that's birthed, which inevitably start, because it's amazing to me. I was such a social animal when I was younger, but like I was also a total drug addict and alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So it was very easy to be social. I was out of my mind half the time. Where now I'm doing social sober, and it's a completely different experience that I'm open to, you know, it's like, okay, I'm awkward at this, definitely. Like, I just had a birthday party on Saturday, and, you know, we didn't have any alcohol, and I could feel my body going, you know, where's the drink? I need a drink. And, you know, all my friends were like, listen, you know, Goldie, just, if you're a head case, okay, that's okay. We still love you. We're still chilling here. And, you know, and I relaxed into it, but I could feel that it was a new experience being social like that. And I'm ready to do that new experience again, because I love interacting with people. But, I mean, it literally took me like 15 years to get to this space. And so I honor when people are like, you know, I'm sorry I haven't called you in a while. You know, I'm doing some work on myself. It's like, no, I totally get that. That's okay. Can you speak on that at all? Or
yeah, well, I think that, you know, this is what's always been called the hero's journey into the underworld. You know, that you don't get to the higher consciousness directly. You get there by going through the subconscious and the, you know, having to clear the dust off the lens. You can't find the light until you get rid of the interferences. So
right on.
And
right on.
You can't really get at those interferences unless you take away the things you've been using to distract yourself from them, you know, and that could be people, it could be substances, it could be, you know, television or reading mystery novels or whatever it is for you, you know, you know, we all have our preferred ways of distracting ourselves, and now it's like texting, you know, and cell phones and being constantly connected to everybody through Facebook and stuff, and but I think that really, truly, everybody does need time alone, because you cannot get to the home frequency unless you can get quiet and get still and go almost into silence for bits of time. So sometimes being in nature and just sometimes meditating, but often in a lifetime, I think it does require a period of some years at times to be alone.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
And it's not that there's anything wrong. It's that there is a need to feel everything that is making you who you are. And if you have your attention on other people all the time, you can't feel what's inside you. It's easy to blame other people or project onto them your own issues and think it's about them.
Yeah.
So you have to take away the reflectiveness, you know, sometimes. And it doesn't mean you have to be a monk in a cell, but it often does mean that you take a time between relationships or have a sabbatical or whatever it would be for you.
Right.
And, so I think that's absolutely necessary, and that once you get through a sort of that major part of the opening, then it you require it pretty often. You know, it's like another oscillation. People, no people. People, social,
right.
Private. You need to
yes.
have both. And
yes.
you function
yes.
well when you have both again. You know? So it's not
that's
either
right
or.
On. That's right on. It's an and now. Because now you're absolutely right. I mean, I did a sacred ceremony with my boyfriend because I was ready to be in a commitment for the first time on New Year's Eve. But I still hold to, I live at with my dad and I live with my boyfriend. I mean, because there are absolutely still time. On average, 4 days a week I'm with my boyfriend and 3 days a week I'm at my dad's house, which is when he goes to his girlfriend's house, so I'm alone. I'm with my cats and my plants, and hands down, it's a balance. I can remember a time in my life where I was like, I want to meet the guy who can handle being with me 24/7 all the time, and that's not even remotely close to what I'm intending for now, because
mm-hmm.
that I can't be with anybody 24/7, let alone have anybody, you know, because I feel from an energetic point of view, sovereignty really thrives in the alone time. I mean, my sovereignty, because I spend tremendous hours, especially when it's warm, in the woods, in nature, hands down, nature, for me, was the healing element during my 15-year sabbatical. I mean, I couldn't believe how I had felt all my life, what I feel when I'm in the forest, is what I wanted as a child all my life and never felt I got. It was just tremendous unconditional love. And it would baffle my mind because I'd be like, I don't understand how nothing's actually hugging me, nothing's actually touching me. And of course it's touching me because I'm physically in there, but I wasn't getting that it was the frequencies, you know, because from the body point of view, from the five senses point of view, it didn't make sense to me how I always thought it would had to be a human being had to validate and love me, and a human being was going to make me sing with, you know, joy. And here it was, you know, trees, rocks, dirt, and bugs. It was so different. That's what I mean by the culture doesn't really, you know, the culture tells us we'll feel better with, you know, a new pocketbook and new shoes. Nothing that I experienced like I did from the forest. And I have friends of mine who have actually done the desert as, you know, as their space to find themselves. And I hear from an energetic point of view that that's even more from a solitude. Like the forest is teeming with life, teeming. Where deserts, you even feel another layer of truly just self. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so at some point I'm hoping that, you know, I do my 3-day vision quest kind of thing. You know, I'm not there yet. I'm really not, because I feel that I'm just happy I like my alone time in the forest, but I can feel it coming in my lifetime that, you know, because I'm starting to really understand it's about getting to know deeper levels of myself, you know, not associated with the rest of the world or the five senses world, but the non-physical world. So.
Well, and I think you find, I've done a lot of work myself in the desert, and I think you
okay.
find as much to pay attention to anywhere. There's forms everywhere, but there's, I think you get more into a mystical connection with life, and I don't know that there's any one kind of environment that's better than another for that, but that you
okay.
focus your attention on anything. And if you pay attention long enough and you feel into things and keep paying attention, you start to notice that those things are conscious too. That if you pay attention to the rock, there's something in there that's paying attention to you.
Right on.
If you love
right
it, it's loving you. And then you realize, oh my goodness, it's the same self. The self is finding
yeah.
the self. And
yeah.
that there is this oneness of consciousness in all things, which you could say it is me, but it is us. It is the same love, the same presence that's just showing up everywhere and looking at itself.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and
right on.
Then that's why you feel hugged. You know, it's like the self is there. The love, the connection is there. And then after you do that for a while, you know, you start to realize that the flow is the that collective consciousness or that unit of consciousness in motion. Everybody's coordinated. You get the thoughts you need. You get the urges you need. You give what other people need. It's like perfectly coordinated, and it's so harmonious that you can just relax your willpower. You don't have to make things work anymore because it's already working.
Because it's already working.
The job is to align yourself with how it is working in each moment and attest to that and to, you know, affirm that and love it and appreciate it and go with it. And then it helps you, you know, and it brings you things you hadn't thought of. So in some ways, the whole idea for me lately about planning or having the big life dream or what do you see in your future, you know, I can't even see anything in the future. It's like I'm letting things arise in the moment, and it just takes me to places, you know.
Yeah,
and I'm much more comfortable with that now than I ever was. And you know, it used to be that when you started to do that sort of thing, you just felt lazy. You know, like, what's wrong with me? I'm not ambitious anymore. But instead, you actually get more done now in this new way. You know, so it's a whole different kind of perception is coming for us about how things happen, how to make things happen, you know, what your destiny is, all those kinds of things.
Yeah. Yeah, because one of the things that I've noticed, again, I always speak just from my personal experience, it very much the first, like, 3 years, 4 years of my, quote-unquote, radio career, you know, was all about, you know, the numbers and marketing, you know, how big could I get the show? How big, how big, how big? Everything had to be big in order to be successful. And, you know, I've definitely flipped that, you know, right on its butt because, you know, it's really now about the soulful experience that I have and the intimacy that I have with my audience and my guests that, you know, we're kind of expressing what you just expressed, you know, so, I mean, beautifully about how it's not about the doing, and it's not about necessarily showing up. Success for me has taken a whole new definition. Because the couple of shows that I did have people on that, you know, drew like 1,000 live listeners, in all honesty, from an energetic point of view, whacked me. I mean, just whacked me. I had mobs breaking out in my chat rooms. I swear to God, Penny, it was crazy because I truly wasn't prepared energetically because I know myself to be empathic, but to handle those kind of audiences, those kind of numbers, made me very uncomfortable. I was off. I felt it was just an interesting thing to experience. And as I've just gotten the wisdom, it's like I'm very attracted to the intimate conversations. That's kind of why. And you're actually my first guest that I'm intentionally doing this. You know, where I'm not looking. And you're very popular, but I'm not looking for the people that can draw me the large crowds. You know, initially I was. You know, I'm really looking for a resonance and an intimate conversation of, you know, of the subtleties of life and you know, the energies and the fields, because, I mean, personally, that's what I want, because, again, you know, my goal has shifted where my goal was to be, you know, the next Oprah Winfrey or Howard Stern, you know, where now, you know, my goal is really just to be, I just want to be Golden Hawk and go through my ascension process and, you know, and experience fully what life has to offer right now, because in my humble opinion, when we slow down and breathe in the silence and the subtle and the stillness, the magic on the vertical line is off the hook. I mean, so much magic is available to us right now that if you're zipping by on the top of the water, you don't even see it. I think
this is the beginning of a kind of a change in culture where, I don't know, somebody said to me the other day, we're sick of slick. I used to get all those internet solicitations from the marketeers, you know, and they all had these similar looking websites, join us and we'll give you these programs and blah, blah, blah. And I got, like, every time I felt one come through, I just was like cringing from the salesmanship that was in it. You know, it was so phony. And I could never stand that. But there's an illusion that, and this again probably from the left brain, in that you have to push hard, be clever, be smart, be slick, get out there to lots of people, keep increasing your numbers, doing all this ambitious progression with willpower in order to force yourself out across the world and get everybody to see you through, you know, and it's all in the world of form. What we're seeing now, I think, is that as you include the non-form world, the inner world, into the mix, there are different ways to do things so that you drop into your truth and you become really saturated with the vibration of your soul. And that connects through to people all over the world in the inner planes, in the inner realm, where there is no distance to cross. And it's almost like these resonant lines connect people up into an inner family, and people find each other then. It's like some kind of a beacon in the inner world, and they find each other. People of the same vibration start to show up in each other's fields. When you're vibrating at a certain level and you're saturated at that level, then other people who are at that level start to show up in each other's fields. You create a unified field of that vibration. You find each other, and then you start to do projects together and work together, and then more people find you. And it happens through energy, not through willpower.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's hard to break that habit of the linear, you know, forceful way of doing things through power. But there's a different kind of way now, which is this quiet way. It's more, maybe it's a more feminine way. You know, it's not compartmentalized. Mm. It's about the field. The field does the work. The field is us. You know, it is our, you know, that you that you find inside the rock. It's there, you know. It's working.
Yeah.
And it's like much less effort, and it's a lot more fun.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, and I feel like that's what's just starting to happen now. It's, I can see it. You know, my books go out and they end up getting out around the world, and suddenly I've got friends in all these countries, and I'm just, I never could have dreamed or imagined that this could be my future, you know, 20 years ago, that this kind of thing would ever be possible to happen without having to travel everywhere and be everywhere and wear yourself out. But it's just like astonishing and it's wonderful.
It's wonderful, right
you
on,
know?
Right on.
And, so, I mean, who would even have thought Facebook of all of the odd things? You know, I've made friends on Facebook that I've never met in other countries. That
Me too.
We talk all the time, and I've never actually physically met them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but don't you still feel them? I mean, I can
still
feel totally, like, because we'll play, we'll journey together. Me and a good friend of mine, Simon, he's listening to the show right now. I mean, he's in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do these journeys together, just typing. Because, I mean, I'm used to phone at least, but this is even just typing. And it's like, I will physically feel him in my body. Warmth, tingles, presence, his joy, his sadness. I mean, the empathic aspect truly is not, you know, distraught by distance. It's like when we intend to connect, we are connected. And, of course, you know, it all started from the resonance that he liked what I was posting, I liked what he was posting, you know what I mean? Meaning we already kind of were at the same frequency, and, you know, we've just strengthened the bond by not allowing it to be, well, okay, you're halfway across the world, then, you know, we couldn't be friends. It's like, I mean, I consider him one of my really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and I do believe that that's something about this level of awareness, because it's almost like what nature taught me, where I used to think I had to be physically in the same space with someone to quote-unquote call them, like, you know, you're my best friend, and you're so important, you're an important part of my life. And, you know, all of those rules seem to be changing. Totally. Because you spoke on another show or on your website about a way we can intentionally change our frequency, our vibrational frequency. Because I think that is, in my humble opinion, it, like, in other words, if you don't like where you are in life, it's not about necessarily going outside of yourself to change, you know, like go to a different bar to meet different people or you know, or I don't know. It seems many of us from the conditioning, we go outside ourselves to change our situations and then, you know, sit at home on the phone or whatever to the same people complaining about how miserable that we are or they are. I'm personally not miserable anymore. I'm really not. But I don't think people understand the importance of, it's the law of attraction, but way beyond, and I know you talk about this too, and I would love for you to share about that as well. You know, the law of attraction way beyond getting the red Corvette in your driveway. That is, you know, in my humble opinion, that is, again, a manipulated aspect of what, you know, the law of attraction goes so much deeper. I personally utilize it to do soul work. I don't utilize it to do manifestation work. That's not, for me, that's just not my goal. My goal isn't to have stuff. If anything, I'm letting go of stuff rapidly because where I'm going, we travel light. I don't need stuff to get there. But can you speak on, like, conscious ways to shift our vibration, because it's not like, you know, Bruce Lipton basically said people believe that their DNA is what it is, and that's, you know, if you're like, my mom died of breast cancer, that would mean I'm, you know, in a percentile where I'm going to get breast cancer because that's my mom's DNA. And I have learned through frequency and vibration, nothing is set in stone. Nothing. Everything is malleable, everything is flexible and fluid. You know, because that's we're creators of all of this. You know, change is not difficult once we recognize, well, you know, a little attention toward yourself and a little focus on, you know, or a little knowingness that it can happen. Well, then you can just start bringing it in, you know, in many creative ways. Do you have, you know, anything to share about how to intentionally change our frequencies?
Well, I think that, first of all, it's important to notice what you're noticing and what you're putting your attention on, because if somebody, you know, loses their job or gets their house foreclosed or whatever, and it's very dramatic, it's scary, it resonates back to the old negative beliefs and fears about, you know, survival and abandonment and all those things. And those kind of dramatic situations catch our attention and rivet us to fear. And then the fear reality gets reinforced and you just keep losing things.
Okay.
So it's important to notice that you may be somehow unconsciously riveted to fear-based experience. Then to say, wait a minute, I'm not limited to this fact-based world, that, you know, your attention is in the physical world, in the world of facts. Oh, like, I lost my job, so I can't have a better job.
Okay.
Or I'll have to go back to the same job I've always had because I can't change, or I can't change because I'm near retirement and I need to stay here for 5 more years because I'll lose my pension.
Okay.
Like, you know, there's all kinds of limited thinking. So
exactly.
What I think is that you pull your attention out, you pull the plug for briefly. It's like I think of it as a stereo headphone jack. You've got, you're plugged into a channel. You're listening to a certain channel. it's an habitual one that, you know, is based on adrenaline, let's say. And then you pull that out and you just, you know, pause. Like, this is boring. I don't really like this channel. I'm going to stop listening to it for a minute. I'm going to be quiet. Then you reactivate your home frequency, which you have to maybe go through some kind of a sequence of thinking of, well, what is it when I play with a puppy? You know, what is it when I look in a child's eyes or when I was doing my favorite new activity or something? And you go through maybe a series of these triggers until you start feeling it. And then it comes back into your body and you're feeling kind of cheerful and enthusiastic, even mildly enthusiastic. And then you stay in that for just a minute and be with it. And then you open up into the imaginal realm. Now, we forget to use imagination when we're in the left brain. It doesn't have imagination. It has facts. So you have to leave the facts that have already been, you know, formulated, because those are old.
Okay.
And they shouldn't limit your new creations. And go right straight back into the imaginal realm and start playing, like a child, with fun ideas.
Mm.
What are like four fun things I like to do? What if I put them all together? What kind of job would that be? You know, or what if I wanted to create a time where I didn't work for a year and I did A, B, C, and D? And then you don't say how, you stay into the what. And you play in it, in your imagination, until it becomes kind of a sense of a movie that your body can actually feel what it would be like. Mm. And if you really want it, you sort of call it in. And you do that by keeping your attention on it. And you keep saying, yes, I love this one. I like this. And maybe before you go to sleep, you say, I'm going to be in this movie now. This is going to be my movie. I like this movie. And maybe there are other people that are in that movie with you, and you go and you pretend that you're in their body, and you look back at yourself and say, gee, I'm so happy Penny's playing with us in this reality, you know, and they validate it for you. And pretty soon, if you keep your attention on it, what happens is it kind of drops down through the layers of the brain. It comes from the abstract realm into the realm where it can be visualized by the visual sense, and then it drops down through the midbrain, you know, and it fleshes out. You can hear it, you can taste it, you can smell it, you can feel it. And then it gets the reptile brain motivated, and then you want it. You start, you know, getting it. And then it becomes physical, and suddenly there it is, and you're in it.
Right on, right on.
But you haven't been blocking it all the way along with all the yes buts. You know, where the left brain will say, that's not, you know, well, but we don't have the money to do that. Oh, but we can't blah, blah.
Right,
and
right.
So it's about having the courage to leave the fact-based world to start creating again. Because, you know, everything starts in consciousness and drops down in frequency to materialize in form. So everything starts as an inner blueprint. You know, and that inner blueprint has really nothing to do with the previous cycle of creation. It can, but it doesn't have to.
It can be independent of it. Right. It's it's not linear, because imagination
isn't
linear.
Remember, we're oscillating. We're in form, we're out of form. We're in form, we're out of form.
Right.
And when every time you go and leave the world of form, you're back in the all possibilities world.
Yeah.
And anything can pop in.
Yeah, right on.
You know, and so that, I think, is the freedom that we need to have. We need to know that we are creative beings and there is no limit on our creativity. You know, that is our free will.
Right.
And it's only the left brain that limits our creativity.
Yeah.
And
which inevitably limits our lives. I mean, that's...
Yes. And I think the other thing is that we have to develop new sort of skills with our perception to learn how to focus our attention more clearly and for longer periods, you know, there are certain skills that we have lost partly through technology. You know, that we have very short attention spans, we're very distracted, and over-stimulated in the nervous system. You know, and there's a great need, I think, for a lot of work with intuition and a lot of work with the body, not working out at the gym, you know, but going into the body and understanding what it is as an actual experience.
Yes.
It's not a thing. It is a kind of mind.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'd love to share with you, because this is a great point to segue into that, because this is what I've kind of been experiencing and expressing on the show lately, is that, okay, so I recognize my mind or my brain as being, it's the drama part of me. You know, the brain is often the part that says it can't be done, or, you know, give it up, you're never going to get this. All those, you know, all the accents that basically say yes, but. I mean, and so I have learned now that my body, not my heart, because, you know, everybody's talking about, you know, this is the world of the new energy is the land of the heart. And I don't doubt that that's the truth. But my heart has absolutely, I mean, I've got some calcium deposits around my heart from, you know, from the abuse, you know, just living life, you know, 47 years. I've been around long enough to have my heart broken several times, and I am finding that where I'm at is that my body, I have this, and I believe it comes from the connection that I've established in nature. My body, like if I set the intention of, okay, I'm going to go to the woods, I can hear in my head immediately go, oh, it's cold, it's winter, you know, you're going to have to get up and get dressed. Do you really want to do, you don't want to do that. You know, just stick around, just stay on the computer and look at trees. You don't have to be with trees. But my body will literally stand up, start putting on the clothes for the, you know, the winter hike. And even as I'm driving to the woods, the mind is still going, you don't want to be here. And I've been telling people, like, I want my heart to be involved in this, definitely. And, you know, I'm in a relationship now, and I want to love deeply, and I want to be deeply loved. It just seems for me, my beliefs find it easier to allow my body to kind of dictate my choices. So, it, like, I'm allowing my body to trump my brain, because I get that my brain really does. The brain isn't looking for me to get to the fifth dimension and ascend this whole experience. My brain, you know, is doing what my brain does. But can you?
Well, I think
can you,
you should distinguish that it's your left brain doing that. The rest of your brain is, you know, doing a lot of other things.
Okay. You know? Okay, that's a valid point. Right
and,
on. Okay.
And if you can shift to your right brain first, so into more your intuitive being with things, the sort of feminine consciousness that's not goal oriented. It's just being with things and noticing things and appreciating things. Then
okay.
You can shift to your heart and to your cells and to your body and to your personal field and the reptile brain. You can drop down through the brain and get more into your animal self. And then your motives can move right straight through there, you know, and that's kind of what I think you're showing yourself.
Okay.
And I think that there is a kind of, what, you know, like a more of a holism that's trying to happen.
Yeah.
That in some ways
yes.
The heart is, I think, often confused with the second chakra. You know, the second
okay.
chakra in the body has to do with sympathetic emotional bonding and connection with others, feeling their feelings for them, you know, that kind of thing, where there's a kind of a merging emotionally that goes on. With the heart, it's much more neutral, as far as I understand it, that
okay.
it has to do with compassion. It's that you know, ability to feel the self in all things that we were talking about in terms of, you know, vision quests before, where
right.
You feel the soul or the self in everything. That's the perception of the soul, soul to soul. It's not necessarily about romantic love. That's, you know, much, I think, lower in the body. I think heart really is a very neutral place, and it understands the oneness of things. It also, if you love someone from the heart, you don't possess them. They don't break your heart. You know, that I think it's a misnomer. I think the heart is a very powerful center that actually sort of eats pain and dissolves it into love. You know, it absorbs lies and turns it into truth. It's kind of a filter, a purification place in the body.
Yes,
and it is a
yes.
doorway where you can move through that kind of consciousness that's in the heart into a real understanding of the soul and what the soul's perception is like in other dimensions, you know, and bring that higher dimensional perception into the body.
Yes.
You know. So I think we all have a bit of a lack of understanding what the heart actually does, you know. And yes, it's true that you will have contractions. The heart, the chest will contract.
Yeah.
When,
yeah.
You know, and yet I think it is, I don't know, I think it's about lies.
Okay.
It's when something isn't in the state of openness and compassion and love that the heart, that the chest contracts until it can open again and understand why that was so.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yes, very much.
You know,
yes.
It's more, it's not so much about emotion as it is about truth.
Truth, right, but not, truth with a big T,
mm-hmm.
not that subjective yeah. truth. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's hot. That's very good. Well, because it's actually helping me understand, because what you were saying about it eating up lies and spitting it out, and now I already feel I'm doing that. I just didn't know it was my heart doing that.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's the digestion of lies and turning it into light. It just takes
yeah.
what's not of love and turns it into love.
Yeah, yeah.
Through understanding.
Exactly.
So it, you know, they have found neurons exactly. in the heart tissue. I mean, it is a kind of mind.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, so it processes like a brain. So it could
wow.
be like a part of the brain, you know. So.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Which makes total sense. I mean, it,
yeah.
And it's so funny because, see, the only thing that was kind of out of whack for me was the understanding of the heart's functions, because
mm-hmm.
I was definitely still in the, you know, that there's this whole dynamic going on, the New Agers with the love and light, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can't get angry, you know, you can't, and I'll be honest with you, God, Penny, believe me and anger, we're tight,
mm-hmm.
we aren't, and I encourage people to understand their anger. I don't encourage people to kick the dog or anything to that nature, but the suppression of anger is a, in my humble opinion, a suppression of an energetic field and a passion that, you know, that's where I think the cancers and the tumors come from people not expressing a truly furious, you know, a fierce energy that, like I said, if you learn how to express it productively, it serves you to express anger. It never doesn't serve you. Of course it serves
well,
you. It's a movement.
It is a movement of energy, but I think anger actually really comes from a misunderstanding that
okay.
has to do with giving your power away to something that you perceive as outside yourself, as separate from yourself. So
absolutely.
That by putting your attention on something that seems outside and separate from you, and thinking then that that has power and you don't, you basically frustrate the flow of your own energy by not letting it flow. As soon as you can see that other thing that is the object of the anger as just part of the whole and you're part of one unified field, then it has no power anymore. And you're
okay.
back in the center of yourself, and you can choose to feel the way you want, and you can do what you want. You can be the way you want, and when you do
oh,
that,
right, so
anger
there's no need
away.
For the anger, right? Okay, okay, that makes sense. Okay,
you know,
so
and,
that
and
you can actually live a life without anger. I mean, like
yes, absolutely. But you can have passion, you can have intensity, but
okay.
anger is the
okay.
frustration of that intensity through your own
right
thinking.
On. Yeah, Yeah.
You know, and certainly you're going to encounter people who are very frustrating. And they, you know, and you're going to give them power to be frustrating, you know, but you don't have to.
Right, right. So it would just be more, because like, I mean, I very much understand, or I'm at least, I'm very conscious of like when Scott, he's my boyfriend's last husband, when he does things that I get angry at, you know, I immediately go, okay, this is something inside of me. You know, he's just triggering it and bringing it up. And so, you know, I don't yell at him anymore. I'm no longer like, it's all your fault. None of that. But so when we get triggered, I told you before we came on the show, like I invite that part of me to sit down and I converse with it. It's like, okay, you know, I'm feeling abandoned. And Scott triggered the abandonment in me, but the abandonment is in me, and I invite the abandonment to come home. It's like, you know, and I've had aha moments recently with abandonment, where I remembered when I was 4 years old feeling abandoned when my mother didn't come when I was crying. And when I had a conversation with 4-year-old me and 47-year-old me, and I actually invited my higher self in as well, the wisdom came to me that I was empathically feeling my mother's abandonment, and that instead of crying, waiting for her to come make me feel better, get up from behind the couch, because that's where I used to go, and go make mom feel better, because it's actually her that I was feeling. It wasn't initially mine, it was my mother's. And I've been trying to heal my mother's wounds my whole life. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that a lot of the things that we hold as these painful experiences, you know, can be gone back into and reexamined now from a point of view of maturity. Where
okay.
abandonment simply becomes, spaciousness. We all oscillate between having people and then not having people, and being private
right.
and being public. And
right.
so we put a negative spin on abandonment, whereas really the soul chooses space and stuff,
Right.
It goes back and forth.
Okay.
There's not a goodness or badness about any either of the states. I mean, there people can be, enmeshed and feel crowded and dominated by other people.
Yes.
The opposite of abandonment.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That enmeshment. But that's just a negative spin on, having social connections.
Right.
And it's all about the lack of feeling of the self being present. You know, so you can, dissolve the whole idea of abandonment just by being present the way you want to be present in your life and knowing that it's going to change from space and emptiness and to stuff and presence and activity to back to space and restfulness and then back to stuff again and activity. And you just notice what stage of the process you're in at any given moment and be with it and don't protest
it. And don't protest it, exactly.
Yeah, don't protest it. It's just what is.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, and
so, true.
So I think that, it is, we are empathic beings, and maybe you did feel something in your mother, but I wouldn't think that you've been trying to, fix her. But I do think that, babies, they don't know they're separate from anybody. They are.
Yeah.
Definitely. And it's easy to be merged with other people's feelings and all of that. It's very common for children to want to heal their parents.
Yeah, huh. Yeah, right on.
Very common.
Right on. Yeah.
And, that's just love. That's just, and it's also survival.
Okay.
It's also just about survival. But we can review all those patterns and redefine it, change it now. But I think a lot of times going back to anger, that anger and blame and those kinds of things are a way of displacing the fear that underlies the situation. So if you don't want to feel the fear of being abandoned, you'll get mad about it and project it away from yourself. You know, that's what we do.
Right.
Project it onto somebody else, and I don't have to feel it. It's another distraction.
Exactly. Absolutely. Right on. That was a good call. Good call.
You know, if you just let yourself feel what you're feeling and then realize it was coming from some kind of prehistoric place that has nothing to do with who you are now, each time it happens, you can turn it around from the negative statement to a more positive one, saying, well, okay, so he left and I've got some space right now. That's great. I like space.
Right on.
And then trust the other person that they'll be back when they, you know, when the flow brings them back.
Right. Right. Not through mental manipulation, but through life itself, just the flow.
But it's a natural flow.
Yeah.
And
very good. Very good.
You know,
thank you.
It's kind
thank
of, I don't know, it's just maybe just reaffirming life's natural principles.
Exactly. Well, but, and I have found, like, recently, you know, when life is the director of the play, so to speak, I mean, four people can be involved, and every single person is getting what they asked for in one timely, synchronistic moment. You know, it's like, where I have been trying to do something like that, you know, for 8 months trying to create this, and, you know, I'm messing it up. I'm totally, you know, just screwing things up. And because I'm coming off of my left brain being, you know, the captain of my ship, the one that was telling me how to go through life. And it's interesting because I'm left-handed. So I'm naturally right brain stronger, you know, at the opposite hand. But I was raised in a family of, you know, engineers. And, you know, I wanted to please my dad, so I basically, I all in divine order. I love my father. I love my mom. You know, I'm not, there's no blaming for them. I just see how in all of my coming back into my natural, the organic orchestration of life, first of all, it definitely plays out absolutely amazingly. I mean, synchronicity it's a daily experience. Since I have consciously started choosing, and I'm realizing now, speaking to you, see, I have unplugged through my whole mind, and you're saying, don't give up the whole mind. I mean, there's a lot of creativity on the other side of that left-hand part. And, you know, I have a dear friend of mine. She created this thing called the initiation art, which is all about understanding life and the power we have through creating things. You know, very, and it's an organic process. It's fabulous. It's a wonderful therapeutic process. We talk all about it on my other radio show, and so I honor that. I'm also getting how I've, you know, because I've been literally telling everybody, unplug from your brain, boy, though, because for me, I was just finding my body had a wisdom, but I'm starting to understand the whole dynamic is. First of all, the left-hand brain also has a place, you know, when it's folding clothes or, you know, when I'm looking through a file that has to be alphabetically organized, you know what I'm saying? It has its place because I'm not one of those that, you know, some of the New Agers are like, you know, abolish the ego, you know, kick it to the curb and don't let it come back because I'm like, you're going to be in a vegetable state if you abolish the ego. You know, everything has a purpose. I just think we've been conditioned to have the wrong things be in charge and, you know, some things that are in the back seat have to come to the front seat and some things in the front seat might want to move to the back seat. And,
remember that it's about fixation. So that, you know, the ego is really a fixation of the left brain. There's nothing at all wrong with individuality. You know, the free form of the ego is individuality. And that means you have to have an individual self in order to understand the fullness of the whole involution and evolution process because we come down in vibration from our spiritual selves of the unified field, slowly, gradually dropping in through different dimensions, you know, and we flow down enough that we crystallize into time and space. We have, you know, fragmented consciousness, and it looks like objects with empty space in between it, you know, and we're a body now instead of, you know, a field of energy. And that bottom part of the involution process of the physical world needs to then be saturated fully with consciousness. And then it evolves again and goes back out. So we're kind of right now at a stage where we're saturating the physical form with spirit so that we can consciously know that we are the soul. Before we had bodies and individualities, we couldn't consciously know what we were. We didn't have self-reflective consciousness, you know. But now this is a really amazing opportunity we have by being physical. So we have to enjoy the individuality, because it is the way we get things to happen here. It's the point of origin, the conscious mind of things, of you know, desire even. Electromagnetic attraction, repulsion, it's where motion originates. We have to have it, or nothing moves anywhere, right? In the unified field, nothing moves. It's all, you know, one. So,
the
ego is fixation of the individuality, right? So when we don't allow the movement and the oscillation is where we get in trouble.
Right.
And there's
the other side of that fixation, right?
Yeah, the left brain wants to lock it down all the time, make a meaning, describe it, put a label on it. And every time you do that, it stops the flow. And then we start to defend that stoppedness of the flow and resist any change.
Exactly.
You know, but it does. It turns. It doesn't just end. Things turn and bend and flow back, and then they turn like a figure eight. You know, at the end of the, it goes out to the end of the figure eight, but it doesn't just reverse itself. It turns. It's still a flow. And then it goes back the other way, and then it turns and flows back. It's very natural, you know. So, you know, part of it is we just have to keep watching ourselves for these contractions and fixations, and then release and let go and let it turn into the next thing and the next thing. And then,
The balance, the balance of it all. Because, that makes total sense to me, because none of this is about annihilating any one part of any of this. You know, everything has value to our experience, and it's about finding the paradoxical point of power is the center of all of it.
Right.
You know,
and that's why, you know, we have, I think, really wise people have great sacred wisdom, but they're also very irreverent. You know, they make jokes about things. And, you know, they're not precious and locked into just being good.
Yeah.
It's like Zen Buddhism, you know, everything is there. It's nothing special, everything's special.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So I'm always a little bit leery about people who are just on their high horse.
Yeah, that's exactly where I've come, where, you got to be able to... You got to be able to see all of it, because that's what that, in my humble opinion, is. The ascension is not about, you know, something being higher than something else. It's the wholeness of all of it, because light and dark are side by side with each other. There, you know, I have been both. I mean, I have in this lifetime as well as, you know, other, but meaning. You know, I've been a drug addict and sold drugs and lived that life, you know, and I've been an energy healer and a light worker, quote unquote. And in my humble opinion, the light workers are so much more judgmental than the drug addicts and the thieves. It's crazy. Because, I mean, it was, and once I came to that conclusion, I was like, okay, what am I missing here? You know, because it's not about, you know, me getting back on that quote unquote right horse to get where I'm going. Then it started making sense to me when, like, I'd read the Zen stories where, you know, the masters were throwing them out three-story windows. You know, where unconditional love didn't always show up as somebody's feelings not getting hurt. Sometimes people's feelings do get hurt. And just that understanding from a balanced point of view that it's not about not having pain. It's not about being only in the light. It's not about always being a good girl or a bad girl. It's a balance. And
an integration.
Exactly. Excellent word. Yes.
You know, because you can, first you get balance. You see both sides of an issue, you know, are part of one thing. You know, you go from one side to the other, back to the other, back to the other, until they become equal. Then they integrate, and you get one.
Yes.
You know, and then it probably separates again, and, you know, you get another form of separation. But, you know, it just keeps going. And, you know, so I think that ascension is maybe, I mean, it's kind of a symbolic word that has to do with evolution or of the moving of consciousness back from form into consciousness of spirit. But I think that there's something happening that has to do with the integration of the non-physical, non-form world with the form world. And it's like you have to be all the way in your body as the soul, see into matter, feel it as particles, feel it as light, feel it as coming and going. And then without having to leave the body or get away from it, you actually transform the entire physical plane. And then you see it as the unified field right here and now. You don't have to go anywhere. There's no ascension. You're there. Bingo. You know,
you're there.
You're in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not about really going up anywhere.
Agreed. Yes.
You see what I mean? It's just
yes.
When the
yes, that's also
occurs,
a misdirection. Oh, sorry. Excuse me?
I said when the merger occurs of these two worlds,
It
changes our perception so dramatically that we understand life in an entirely different way. And that's what I call the intuition age, and that's coming, where we're not based on, you know, we've been through the industrial age where the body and physical stuff was the big focus. You know, machines were invented. And then we got computers, you know, fast machines. And then that morphed into the internet, and we got into information age, which is mental. And then that speeded up with the World Wide Web, and so that we can barely process information in a linear way anymore. It's way overwhelming. And the next leap is going to be into the intuition age, which is moving out of the left brain into the right brain, into the body, into the heart, into the field of the aura even, is conscious, and knowing things directly without linear processing, knowing things holographically.
Yes.
It's going to be entirely different and all in the present moment and entirely, you know, everything at the speed of light. And we can't imagine it now because we're still in the linear cause and effect gradual kind of reality that's very, very slow.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're seeing technology speeding up, but I think, you know, we're ourselves are going to have to, you know, almost put down the technology and become telepathic in order to get to the next level. You know, I don't know that the gadgets are going to go fast enough, ever.
You know, right on. Yeah, yeah.
They're nothing like, when you start to look at the brain and the holographic nature of consciousness, where every part includes the whole, then you see that, you know, you could know the whole unified field in one instant. It's going to be very, very, very different. And inventions will come and new technologies will come that are much more based on the new consciousness after we get to the consciousness.
Right.
You know, but not
so that,
before.
So that would have to come first, right? The consciousness would have to come first because that's where we would birth the technology.
that's right. Everything starts in the consciousness realm and drops down. You know, so maybe it leapfrogs, you know, the consciousness comes, then the technology comes, then the technology causes the next level of consciousness to jump, and then so forth. But I think that so many people now are really working in their inner worlds, you know. Maybe they're playing with technology too, you know, I know where I am. And, and yet there's, you know, a hunger to go directly into these experiences.
Yes.
Of more, you know, communion and enlightenment and, you know, these whatever transformation really means, you know, what happens to you when that separation ends.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
don't die.
Exactly. You don't die.
No, you don't die.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, well, and it's almost, it's interesting because, you know, when you don't die, it's funny because that's like one of the biggest fears. Afraid death and speaking publicly are like two of the greatest fears in humanity. And it's so interesting because we're at that place where both of those are kind of being confronted. And I don't just mean the confronting of people speaking publicly, but there seems to be an urgency of some sort that it's time to start talking about our experiences, that the ones that did go inside, to start sharing, you know, what's going on, that it's, you know, we kind of, mass consciousness seems to be on some level caught up in what I would consider, like I consider us birthing right now. This is a process of birthing us into this new level of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And yet most of mass consciousness seems to be focusing on the labor pains. It's like, you know, birthing can be a painful process indeed, but what about the baby? Let's not lose sight of the baby. We are birth. You know, if we're letting go of, you know, the old paradigms that no longer serve, that's because the new baby won't, you know, is not a resonance for that. You know, the new baby doesn't want 5% of the population running 95% of the world. That's clearly out of balance. You know, the humanity that's coming in is about balance. And, you know, with this question coming up, what are your feelings for, you know, I mean, you must have contemplated, you know, 2012. This is, you know, the big year. What are you feeling or sensing is coming down the pike, so to speak, and or already here?
Mm-hmm. Well, I usually at the beginning of every year I write a letter about what I sense is coming, and they're on my website, on the first page of my website on the right-hand side. People can download them from the past few years. But this year, I really, when I felt it, I started to feel actually fairly optimistic, and that the frequency is getting extremely, extremely fast, and results are coming very fast, but also I think that this is a year where people are going to be very hungry for freedom and flow.
Right on.
And anything that is holding back that flow in a personal life or in politics or, you know, earthquakes or whatever, you know, it's going to break loose and break free. And so I think the big word for this year is flow. And so that could mean rebellion. It could mean violent, you know, uprisings. It could mean political, you know, upheaval. It could mean volcanic eruptions or, you know, all kinds of things. And it can also mean breakthroughs in science or new inventions and all kinds of wonderful things as well. But I don't see it as a year of, you know, Armageddon or anything even close.
Right.
Something to do with, you know, the end of time as we have known it in terms of linear, you know, past, present, future, that there's kind of more of a sense of a coalescing of the past and future into a very expanded present moment where it's almost like if you're in the present moment and you feel it, it's like a big ball around you. And it can expand and contract. And as you stay in the center of it, it can get bigger and bigger and bigger, and it then encompasses the future. It encompasses the past. It's all part of your body, your now. You have access to all of that data. It's at different frequencies. So if you modulate your frequency, you can access data from anywhere. So your future is really no longer out there ahead of you on a line, you know, separate from you. It is one of the layers of the onion around you. And if you change your frequency to match it, you'll be in it, you know, immediately.
Yeah,
it's
experiencing it as the present, right? I mean, and
it,
if you're
it
in
is.
It, you're experiencing it, yeah.
That's it. It becomes the present immediately as soon as your frequency matches that reality.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's a different way of understanding time. I think we're not moving into the future so much.
Okay.
There's a collective higher potential reality for everyone, and we're already in it at some level.
Okay. Yeah.
And it is causing us, even in this reality, to start to have different kinds of thoughts so that we'll be able to get to that level.
Yeah.
It's working with us.
Yeah. Yeah, because isn't that kind of what the flow itself has intelligence?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there. Because another thing that I noticed is that, like, I had this just an awareness that my physical body or the path that I might be walking, I had this awareness like underneath my feet, and it was so interesting because it was below me, not quote unquote above me, like everybody was telling me, you know, go up to find your higher self. I found my higher self was below me, and I visualized it as a river that it has already evolved itself without any of the distractions from, you know, anything that has been happening from the third and fourth dimension. Like, and that at some point in time, exactly, it almost seems like it'll just expand itself at where my body will then be included in that flowing river, and that I'll see that even though, like, my perception was that I was, you know, 47-year-old female nanny, you know, all those third-dimensional labels and stuff, they'll just, when the time is right, they'll just morph into my pure light body, evolutionary process. I'll remember everything my evolutionary process was going through, even though at a third dimension, I didn't have a clue that's what
mm-hmm.
I was going through.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it took the fear out of it that, you know, because my whole fear thing was, I'm not going to ascend, don't leave me here. But I can tell you, literally, since January 1st, 2012, there is something in the energy of this year,
mm-hmm.
for me personally, it's just alleviating fears, and it's not necessarily changing my outside world, it's changing my perception of what's happening in my outside world and inside world, and it's bringing me to a space of, like, I'm more calm. I'm at peace. I'm not panicking. I'm not. You know. And it was funny that you mentioned, you know, a leapfrog. You know, today is leap year or
That's
whatever,
right.
Leap day.
Yeah.
Happy leap day, Penny.
Yes.
I thought it was very. Now that's something I couldn't plan. That I really couldn't.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
Well, you know, the whole thing about don't leave me here, that's kind of related to your early abandonment ideas.
And right, okay.
When you realize that you're sort of just in the center of the unified field and you can't get out of the unified field, there's nowhere to go. You can't be abandoned because you're already everywhere. You know, you're already there.
Yes. Yes.
And all you can do is be in the center of yourself and let yourself experience all the memory of what you are. And, you know, so there's no possibility of abandonment ever.
Right, right. It's physically impossible.
Only you have the movement of your attention into the fixed ideas of the left brain, which are very much based on limitation. And then you can have a reality that makes it seem like you're cut off.
Yes.
Then you have to just remember, oh, that's just one of my left brain thoughts. Let me go back into my right brain and heart and body again, and I'll feel connected again. Another oscillation.
Yes, yes. Which for me always, when I'm too far where I can't do it myself, I just go sit in the woods. And I'm telling, on the drive to the woods, it'll already start happening. You know, meaning mm-hmm. My body gets so excited. Yes, we're going to the woods, and I'm already at the woods before I even get there. It's like, oh, this feels amazing. And this is the truth for everybody, right? I mean, no one/everyone. I mean, because it's those polar opposites are always so funny to me, because it can never just be one. It has to be its polar opposite as well. I mean, we're in a world of duality. This is a dimension of duality. We're going to have both.
Mm-hmm.
But so that would mean everyone is in the center of their field.
That's right.
Correct? I mean, yeah. So, I mean, there will be no one left behind. You know, isn't that some government program or something? from a soul point of view, no soul can be left behind. You're already in the unified field. It's just a matter of how, the difference would just be how we would be experiencing.
That's right, and there can be, you know, parallel realities all existing in the same field at different frequencies. So you could have two Earths, three Earths, four Earths, all at different levels functioning differently.
And
I think that may be what happens, you know, in, you know, the near future, is that there may be a kind of an energetic shift, and some people who've evolved fairly highly will move on to an energetic Earth, you know, and the others will stay in one that they think is very, very physical.
Right,
There won't be,
I agree,
loss.
Yes, right.
But I think
so everybody
maybe a
gets
kind
what
of bifurcation.
They want. Oh, pardon?
I think it could be a kind of bifurcation of our sense of the planet. You know, so there
okay,
might
what
be
does that mean?
Planets.
I don't know what that means. I don't know
a
what bifurcation means.
A separation of the planet.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Two
okay.
parallel planets. I think I've dreamed that. I don't know how that exactly works, but I feel like if enough people create a critical mass of higher consciousness, they may actually precipitate an Earth that matches that vibration, or
right
they
on.
May go on to one that matches that vibration.
Right. Right, because it does seem to me that there are, you know, in some sort of basic sense, there are the people that are kind of, you know, doing the inner work, you know, making, you know, the compassion, the unconditional loving, making the virtues of life the focus, and then there are other people that are, you know, slashing and, you know, they're like animals in the death row. You know, they're just, you know, they're crazy. They're going to take everything down with them that they can. You know, they
mm-hmm.
don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I find it interesting because I see Facebook, like certain people that, you know, you can sense that, you know, they want to feel good, but they're still fighting the thrashers. Because I'm like, I laugh and go, as long as you're still fighting them, you're still playing with them. You know, it's like, on some
well, it's
level,
a matching vibration.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Through dissonance, though, not through resonance.
mm-hmm.
You know, which is, I don't think people get that, but exactly what you just said. As long as you're fighting it, you're still in it. You know, because, like I've been talking with my girlfriend Janine, going, I want to find the ability to love people that work at slaughterhouses. Because I know from a soul perspective, the love exists there, you know, because it's a part of the experience. I just need to have the understanding of it. And it's interesting because I'm willing to look at my own dark side, so it makes me immediately open. I can look at a dark experience on planet Earth. And, like, one of the hits I got was, you know, what makes you think the animals don't learn from painful experiences just as I've learned from painful experiences. I mean, that was like the first hit I got off of it. It's like, I think we misunderstand pain until we get into those bigger, like, I think the field understands pain from a very different space than the physical five senses does.
Well, it's another contraction. You know, pain, I think, is, you know, when you cut off the flow of the soul and you create almost like gaps, is the way I see it clairvoyantly. It's like where you are thinking about what isn't happening.
Okay.
Like, I don't have love, or I'll never be loved, or I don't have a job, or I don't have a house, or, you know, and you're looking at what isn't.
Okay.
It creates this weird kind of gap that is a lie, because there's always life in everything. I mean, presence, consciousness is everywhere. It's in, there's never a time when you don't have something.
Right.
And so when you try to convince yourself that you don't have something, the body can't compute it. It doesn't compute. And there's a, you know, it's like a confoundment occurs. And that confoundment, I often feel people call pain.
Mm.
They don't, it's like, it's kind of like, huh? That's like, you have to go, huh?
Exactly.
You know, and it stops you in your tracks, you know, and you can't feel the soul in that moment where you feel nothing, or you're making yourself try to feel nothing. Do you get it? You know, and so when you're fully present, for instance, with a headache, and you go in and you feel the headache and you bring attention into it, it often disappears. If you any place that you have pain in the body, if you go into it with attention, it fills up the empty place, and it's like the illusion of the pain is gone.
Mm.
You know, I've noticed, I stay with some friends who have asthma and lung problems, and I notice when they go to sleep, there's no coughing, no snorting, no pain, no problems. And as soon as they wake up first thing in the morning, they start coughing.
Okay.
You know, and it's kind of like the consciousness is back on deprivation.
Oh, wow.
And when you're feeling fullness, there's no pain, because there's no illusion, there's no lie. There's
right
no
on.
Emptiness.
Right
so
on.
I think pain is really an illusion that the universe has no experience of at all, that the soul has no experience of at all.
Yeah.
It's just a stalling of the, you know, enlightenment, you know, the conscious enlightenment where you realize I am the soul. It just stalls
right.
you from having that,
right.
you know, recognition.
Well, ultimately that experience too, right? I mean, the experience,
mm-hmm.
that's why we can have a space where we can live anger-free, pain-free, because it's not that they don't exist. Well, but you're not experiencing the illusion of that they don't exist,
mm-hmm.
that they do exist,
mm-hmm.
you know, because, I mean, and that's pretty fascinating. By the way, Simon just typed, he this is groundbreaking. So thank you so much, Penny. This is real. Well, I knew my audience would love you, because this is just real, you know, because we're all here kind of like, you know, it's so interesting, because it's like we want to battle. You know, there's a part of us that wants to fight it. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
like, what can I do? And yet, you know, the pulling back of the onion is understanding it's not about a power play. This isn't a power play. This is about a finesse. You know, the soul
mm-hmm.
works, you know, because like when I shoot pool, my brother always used to kick my ass when we shot pool, because he had finesse and I would slam the balls.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd go, you know, it looks better when you slam the balls, but you win more games when you have finesse. And, you know, I'm seeing that's the way the soul works. The soul
mm-hmm.
doesn't need to slam things and fight things.
Yeah.
And the soul is so quietly just comes in, goes, remember, you're all of it. And then,
you know, inner voice said to me once, drama doesn't make it better.
Exactly. Right on.
You know,
perfectly
and
stated. Yes.
It could be entertaining, you know, but it doesn't really
right.
move it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's so true. And you know, and that's why there's value to it, you know, because it's it always, because I always try to, at this point in my life, nothing is, I have no regrets. None. Everything was the journey I chose. It got me to who I am and where I am now. And as well as everything I choose now will get me to the journey of, you know, the next level of enlightenment and or experience. Because, I mean, in my humble opinion, there is definitely changes going on that, you know, I believe, you know, we're graduating. You know, it's you know, and I love that you were saying, you know, the lies and the deception can't be held anymore, because, you know, from the third and fourth dimensional point of view, there is tremendous deception going on.
Yeah, but you see, this is the part of the natural process of transformation, is that when the subconscious stuff releases and it comes up into the conscious mind and you have to look at it again, a lot of people try to re-suppress it. They don't want to look at it, and they try to push it back down, and then it pops up again because it's built up even greater force. You know,
okay.
It's like the vibration on the planet is so high now that there is no subconscious mind that exists the way it did 20, 30 years ago. You know,
that
vibration has risen also. So
yeah.
The stuff that was at that vibration has nowhere to go. It must come up into the conscious mind. And that's the flooding that we're experiencing, you know. And so what people do is they try to push it back down again. It won't stay down. It comes up again. And, of course, when these things come up, they act out again in your daily life, in your conscious mind, as new experiences.
Yeah.
And then you have to deal with it. You know, it becomes conscious, literally. In
literally,
society,
yeah.
It's current events. It's politics. It's, you know, collective in nature. But the same process is happening.
Right.
So when it comes up, most people then try to avoid it or deal with it through fight or flight methodologies. They either try to control it, dominate it, do all the control stuff with willpower, or they run away and distract themselves with addictions or give their power away to other authority figures and say, you do it for me, I don't want to think about this.
Exactly.
They leave their body, they go unconscious, you know.
Yeah.
In my book, I have this outlined in 9 stages with all the symptoms and different things for each stage. But I see this now, of course, in politics, is that the people who are used to controlling and having power and money are not wanting to lose that power, and it's getting shaky. You know, the current of consciousness on the planet is rising, and that kind of reality that they live in cannot continue. It's becoming very antiquated. And I think what's going to happen, and of course, you know, then they dig in more. It's like the death throes, right? They're going to fight it to the death. The ego death does not want to die. So we're going to see that battle has been happening in our politics, you know, this contentiousness and hatred and manipulation and trickery and all this is ways of working with control. You know, and so we're seeing that conservative kind of consciousness, which wants to preserve the past and power, is using all of those kinds of methodologies and kind of hoping that other people will be so intimidated that they'll go into the flight methodologies and avoid responsibility.
Right on,
you know?
Right
and
on.
So
yeah.
That's playing out a lot right now, and yet the energy continues to build in its frequency so that more people are moving beyond, as you said before, the opposition to, you know, fighting what you don't want and moving into the third point above the two polarities where you get perspective, where you're not engaging in suffering and pain and fighting it or validating it. You're creating another reality where it gets to be so attractive that other people just want to join it.
Right.
You know, you're working at creating a new reality that is so interesting and fun and easy that people are sick of the old one because it's so slow and sticky and boring that we don't want to do that slow thing anymore. It's like, could we live without the internet anymore, ever again? You know, like, no.
Right.
We're not going backwards.
Right. Right.
And so, of course,
right.
You know, the consciousness then is going to eclipse all the old ways of thinking and the organizations and organizational structures like government, the church, you know, all the institutions that we have.
Yes, literally.
The way we
yes.
learn, the way schools try to train you to learn in this old,
exactly.
old, slow way
old,
that really
old.
Is antiquated.
Agreed.
It won't
Agreed.
Work. And pretty soon, I think what we're going to see, especially in politics, is that the people who are advocating this, you know, resistant, contractive, you know, preservationist way are going to be seen as silly and old and buffoons and kind of stupid. You know, actually, and people will more and more and more start to see the old things as just too slow and that they don't really work. And
right.
there will be then a kind of a birth of innovation. And I think that's coming. But I really see it right here this year on the horizon of breakthroughs, like I said before, science and technologies and medical breakthroughs and energy,
nice.
Solving the energy crisis and,
yes.
you know, curing
yeah.
AIDS or whatever, cancer and,
yes.
and new political systems, new ways of learning, virtual things, and new human abilities. I mean, everything, it's just going to go like gangbusters.
Yeah.
And we're going to see, we don't have to fight the old political regime because it's
right.
going to do itself in.
Right.
It's like
right.
the Taliban, you know, terrorism. It's such a system that is cut off from women, it's cut off from nature, it's cut off from love, it's based on hate. It can't survive. It has no
yeah.
incoming life force. It's only the left brain and willpower. And if, you know, people are, you know, resisting terrorism based on fear, it's the same consciousness as the terrorism, just on the other
itself.
Side. You know?
Exactly. Exactly.
And, yeah. So it's an eclipsing of oppositional thinking. Do you know what I mean? It's like something
yes.
new.
Yeah. It's getting bigger then, right?
Out
it's
of the
getting
blend.
Bigger than it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's going to be happening. I think we'll see it this year. I mean, I think we'll see a big change.
Well, I'm
in
experiencing
politics.
It, so mm-hmm. yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm very hopeful. You know that it. Well, one of the things I liked about this conversation was, it really shows it's the organic process. You know, in other words, it doesn't matter if they've read the books, done the meditations. In other words, it's happening from a planetary. It's happening from a cosmos. You know, it's not, it's so funny, you know, in all of my, you know, yearnings to know, Earth is not just going through changes. Every planet in our solar system
mm-hmm.
is heating up, you know, literally going through some sort of mechanism that the body of their planet is shifting, which, you know, immediately takes that it's not just it's not the end of the Mayan calendar for Earth, it's the end of the Mayan calendar for the whole solar system, and for all I know, for the whole galaxy and cosmos. So, you know, the change is really bigger than just the individuated Earth. It's
mm-hmm.
it's everywhere. You know, it's, you know, and because in all honesty, I'm starting to get in my own level of conscious awareness, my own awareness that, you know, all of us are planets and galaxies. You know, these are all different levels of conscious beings. And
mm-hmm.
a being, it doesn't necessarily have to be quote-unquote human to be conscious. And, like, I've known Earth was conscious since I started hanging out in the woods. And literally, when my mother died and then I met my bigger mother, Mother Earth, everything, Mother Earth healed me. She brought me back the awareness that my mother's still with me and still
mm-hmm.
communicates with me. You know, it's like, so it's like you're saying the eclipse is about, it's just, it's like there's an expansion that it's just engulfing. All that felt separate in the expansion gets engulfed and has this awareness of, oh, look, just like where anger and fear disappear, so do being alone in the sky disappear. You know, it's like, you know, all of it is disappearing through this this eclipsing. And I love it because, like, I trust nature implicably. I mean, explicably. Sorry, my vocabulary. I just trust nature totally. Because I've had trust issues my whole life. But I've truly learned that if it's natural, if it's organic, boy, let it be. As if me messing with it will change it. No, that won't. But it's not just me. It's also governments can't change it, and HARP can't change it. And, you know, it can play around, but the bottom line is the planet's consciousness will trump the individual cells, just like my body. Like, I've had a few scares of having certain symptoms where my mother had her cancer symptoms. I found a lump on my breast. I found a dark spot on my ankle. Those were my mom's first signs of cancer. And I immediately got, but I'm not my mother. I'm me. So, in other words, instead of just responding, oh, my God, I've got cancer, this is happening, you know, I went beyond it. And then they have not manifested into cancers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just because, you know, there's 5% of the population doesn't want to, you know, embrace this new way of being because they don't want to let go of power, the consciousness of the planet is going, listen, we're not worried. When it comes down time to whatever we got to do with those beings, it's really none of my business, and that's fine. I don't need to know. All I need to know is trust my own self, trust Mother Nature, trust the sun, trust the harmonics of this whole experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is happening, and I'm very excited about that. I'm delighted because I'm not one that says I want to go and I don't want others to go. I want everybody to experience this because you know because I feel, in my humble opinion, we'll have so much to talk about when we get to the barbecue if we're all experiencing it.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
I mean,
yeah,
right on. Well, you're fantastic, Penny. I apologize if I was a little sticky today with my whole head cold, head case.
No, I didn't notice it at all.
Oh, thank you. Please share where people can find you because your website has tremendous amounts to read and listen to, and I want people to definitely be able to get a hold of you.
Okay. Yeah, my website is just my name, but my name is spelled a little oddly, so it's Penny Pierce, and that's P-E-N-N-E-Y, and then Pierce is P-E-I-R-C-E, so pennypierce.com.
Okay.
And like I said, there's all the kind of prognostication letters there and all kinds of, you know, audio and all kinds of stuff on there. So
yeah, you have a wonderful website. It's very easy to navigate too. Very easy. It was beautiful.
Yeah. So I am. I do readings. Although right now I'm starting a new book, and so I'm probably going to be writing for quite a few months. But I will be at Omega Institute in New York in I think July, and then Kripalu up in Massachusetts. You know, I'll be there in September this year.
Okay.
Doing frequency trainings. And people may want to get the first book that I had is The Intuitive Way, which is a course on intuition development. And then Frequency is The Power of Personal Vibration. And those books are in many, many languages, so they're really available pretty widely throughout the world.
Okay.
And I would recommend those two. I have, you know, books on dreams and one called The Present Moment, but I'd say Intuitive Way and Frequency are really going to be ones that people can use as almost courses on, working on this consciousness stuff.
Yeah.
And if people want readings, I'm doing fewer right now, but you can sign up for them on the website too.
Okay, so you can do readings by phone, correct? They don't have to be in person.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Right.
Well, You're just delightful. I really enjoyed this time. I hope you come back again. I know my audience loves you, and feel free. Well, you're on Facebook. I'll connect with you on Facebook because often visit the page. That's when everybody comments, and I love for people to know that it's helpful. Everything that we're sharing, it's helpful. People are appreciative of it, and you are definitely making a difference. You made a difference in my world, definitely.
Oh, thank you.
I appreciate
it.
You're very,
yeah,
very welcome.
You're welcome to connect with me on Facebook, too.
So I'll connect, and then people can find you, because I'll also post your website my Facebook wall. So that'll make it, yeah. So thank you so much. And
Thanks, Goldie. I appreciate it. It's been a nice, fast-flowing 2 hours.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. When we have fun, it goes by fast. That's a great compliment.
Right.
Thank you. And I'll definitely be in touch to have you come back on again soon.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, everybody.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
You've been experiencing Another Reality Show with Golden Hawk. Another Reality Show is live Thursdays 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, or listen and be enlightened anytime that works for you. Questions or comments, email the show, goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. That's goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. Also, visit us on the web at www.anotherrealityshow.com. Remember, all you rule breakers, misfits, troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists, everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what is right with you. You see things others don't. You're hardwired to change the world. And unlike 9 out of 10 people, your mind is irrepressible and you were born to be a revolutionary. And here at Another Reality Show, we salute you. Stay amazing and keep on flying. Good night.